the Hante Geshir is asoy. The Hante Geshir is to try, this is the plan. We don't mekayim the plan, maybe we will. Not always are we mekayim the plan. Has a lot to do with what we started to talk about in the Sichas Chilin Shel Tavad HaChomim before the Shir. I'm a lot of sitting. But the Hante Geshir, the plan is that we should start talking about some details. What do I mean? We're up to chapter 4 in the Shmuel Brooklyn. Chapter 4 is the chapter, the main chapter of the whole book, as we discussed in the first sheet of this Zman, in this series. It's the main chapter because it gives the actual theory of what is good to do. What are the good middos to do, more particularly. And what it does, and the main place, the rules, the klal, the structure of what it does is almost entirely in the first few paragraphs of this chapter, where it gives you the theory. Then it goes on to say people have mistakes that people make. Then it goes in to say at length that certain mistakes that people make, and it's an entire interpretive discussions of how people understand the Torah with certain mistakes, and so on and so forth. But the main structure, the main theory, is literally in the first two or three paragraphs. And as we complain, the Rambam is way too short. It's not possible to understand what he is saying from these few paragraphs. The only way to understand is like we already quoted the Rosh. Yeah, we discussed the Rosh in this sheet. The Rosh quoted the Rashba. Yeah, advised. Ha'alik Chivas Rosh said, B'Shem, a great man of Barcelona, who some people said was the Rashba. I don't know who told me, but that's what I've heard in the secret book on the Tzadik Chachma, that it must have been the Rashba. Which other great men were in Barcelona? Anyways, that told him that in the parts of Shas that he knows, he understands the Rambam, the parts of Shas that he doesn't know, he doesn't understand at all the Rambam. And from there he proved that the people that don't learn Shas at all for sure don't understand the Rambam, although the Rambam's goal officially is to explain the halacha to people that didn't learn Shas. So it's a kasha on the Rambam, how he missed his goal so amazingly, but it's the fact. And of course, there's more to talk about it in that context of halacha, but this is not our discussion. But in the context of the Rambam's theories, the Rambam's theology, the Rambam's ethics, I think this is 100% true. Anyone that reads the Rambam without his sources, the Talmud of these things, which is not Gemara, of course, but Aristotle, does not understand even one word. How do I know? Because the parts that I learned Aristotle, I understand the Rambam. And the parts that I didn't, I don't. Just like the Hadith Rajba, the great man of Barcelona, said. And not only that, I see that the people that didn't read the sources have entirely made up weird readings of the Rambam. They get into all kinds of difficulties, that get into weird loops and make up stuff. And that's just how it is. Now, why did the Rambam write in such a way? That's a good question on Mr. Maimonides. And you can go to his kaver and ask him, but it's not really relevant to us. Because we want to understand. We don't want to, for the Mr. Maimonides, we want to understand the subject, right? Ask him. You ask him? Okay. So therefore, I claim that it's very hard to understand, but using the sources that Rambam himself used, we can try to understand the theory, but he does an extreme version of shortening and epitomizing, like giving just the summary of the summary of the summary. But it is here. And what we're doing is a little bit opening it. So we started with this description. Now, there's two parts in this. Two parts. Let's say two parts, and then each of these two parts has two parts. So you could keep in track. Oh, I forgot to bring should I put a blackboard? So, whiteboard? So on the whiteboard, you'll see, firstly, that the two parts in this chapter can be described as the theory of what is the good activity, good habits, good middos, and so on, and how to get to it. This is one way of dividing it, a greater way to divide the two, right? What they are and how to get to them. What they are is, and I'm going to make numbers with these paragraphs so you could read, I could refer to them better. But what they are is in the first, until it says, until it says Vida, actually a very good way to cut up Rambam's when it says Vida. In this one it's page 46, I don't know if you have the same one, I'm not sure. Well, it's probably not the same one. and this one, if you have one that says Sivan on the cover, then it's on page on page 48. Okay, in 45 the chapter starts. It gives you what the good activities are, and then it talks about mistakes that people have. And then in page 45 it starts talking about how you get them, how you buy them, right? How you get them, what you do if you have wrong ones, and so on. So these are the main two parts. Also in Mishneh Torah, you can see it divided into these two parts. The first presentation of the theory of the good midos is divided into these two parts, okay? That's number one. Now, we are not talking about the second part, which is the how. It's possible that the whole Torah is only about the how. Another important distinction. But we're talking about the what. What and how are two different things, right? Yeah, master? What is a nice house? How to make a nice house? Just two different arts, almost. Or two different parts of one art. Very different, though. Right? They're connected, but they're two different things, right? You can know what something is, or what the good version of something is, and how to make it good, which is a different discussion. Of course, they're connected, but just to clarify. Now, in the what, there's a lot of another two parts that I have to clarify. Two parts of the what. Two parts are klal and prat, the general definition, and the more particular definition. Okay, the general definition is in the first paragraph where he says, what does he say? What are the good activities? Just the first paragraph, or here in my thing, the first two paragraphs. Talks about the activities and then about the virtues, which are the powers or the habits or the things in the soul that make these, do these activities. And then he starts giving Meshulam, right? Meshulam. There are two paragraphs of Meshulam. That's how it's called here, Mushal Zeh. I mean, the word Mushal here is not, doesn't mean a parable, right? It means an example. For example. And the examples are the second part of the definition. Right? Make sense? We get a general definition, and then we get examples. The important thing to realize about these examples is that they're not just examples of the definition. Why not? Because remember, the Rambam is making everything so short here we can barely understand what he says. So if he says anything, we should be very thankful and we should understand that he's trying to teach us something with it. So if someone gives us examples, we shouldn't say, oh, seems to be superfluous, seems to be extra. We understood until now. Well, we didn't understand anything. Maybe in the examples we'll understand a little better what the definition is, because he's done such a bad job of telling us what the definition is itself, that maybe the examples will help us. Make sense? That's one important thing to notice about the examples. Second way of saying this would be to say that it's generally very hard to grasp general definitions without examples. And this for two reasons that we have to understand. One reason, because human minds are not abstract enough. Right? If I tell you, should I give you an example of a law on example? No, give me what's the example. How do I have to do everything?
You offer it.
Good example. Tell me an example. Have an example. Example of something that we need examples for. There are two kinds of examples. Okay. One example is me showing you an abstract rule or principle in a concrete way. And since our minds understand things concretely better than they understand things abstractly, you usually get it. For example, if I tell you you should not be bothered by people bothering you, okay? Shouldn't be bothered. I can't even tell you why. You shouldn't be bothered because you should think that you're above them. Since you're such a Balgava, and you're supposed to be above everyone, then why would you let other people influence your state of mind? Sounds incongruent with your prestige, your self-worth. So therefore, you shouldn't be bothered. That's a nice rule. I'm giving ethical examples because they're closer to our subject.
That's what you would call concrete?
No. That's not concrete. It's let alone, everything is relative, right? It's still an abstract rule. If I tell you, listen, now I give you a rule and also give it a certain explanation, right? I said, look, since you probably think of yourself highly, then somehow this doesn't match, doesn't go along with being mad at the guy that cut you off in traffic, because that guy's just a schmuck. Ah, you notice what I just did, right? Now you understand it much better what I was trying to say, right?
You gave it a better motion.
Not a better one. I gave one. Until now, I just gave you a principle without an illustration, right? That's another word for it. Without an illustration, I told you, look, you're so important, you shouldn't be let yourself be influenced, or let your mood be influenced by lower people than you. Then I told you, look, you're a chushevin geman, you're on the way to Seder. And then there's some guy who's on the way probably to Shikling Zech or something. And I go.
Only person who would cut you off.
And why else? And he cuts you off. And then you're nachbroig is afem ochet. It's not. These things don't connect, right? Now you understand much better what I was trying to say. But what do you understand better?
The principle.
Yeah. So in other words, it's not that I'm telling, there's two ways of reading this, which I'm trying to get at. It's not that you're understanding better what to do, right? One thing that I could tell you, which is also going to tell you. So this is the first thing. The first thing, with giving illustrations, is a good word for it, is that people have a hard time understanding what you mean when you give a principle. Although we agree that the principle is what is important here. Maybe. I don't know if in this subject it is. But let's assume that the principle is what we're trying to get at. Right? If I want to tell you a lam de shevart, tell you that, you know, that the idea of... No, was it lam de shevart? No, please. That was lam de shevart. Something that does something like this, right? What's the idea of something? What's that daughter, right? What's the definition?
A mice hadlaka.
I don't know what that means. Something that's helpful somewhat. No, you people don't understand what I'm looking for.
Ellie, Lozzy.
God,
that's
a while.
What is it?
What? Lam de Shavart is something like Melucha of Shabbos is really a creation, not work. Okay? Most Lamdim agree with this nowadays for some reason. Right? This is something that's supposed to explain to you what all the Lamdas Meluchas and in some sense all the questions about what is a Melucha and what is not are really about. Right? It's a very general definition. Just to be clear, if you go and tell someone that didn't ever hear of Hilchos Shabbos, didn't ever hear of Lamentas Melucha, and you tell them, look, there's something called creation and something called work, and it seems like this is more of a work than that, he's going to tell you, can you get to the point? What do you want from me? If you have a lot of questions, you look into Hilchos Shabbos and you say, I don't understand what this is really about, now they give you this svart and you say, wait, this makes sense of 90% of the cases. Okay, it doesn't make sense of all of them, but it helps you understand what I was about until now. Right? But if you don't, this is a case where you already have all the illustrations in your head, you just didn't have the understanding of them. Right? This is, I'm showing you how it's helpful. In my previous case, it's not clear that the concept is really important. But in many cases, if you're looking for understanding, which is what Lamdim are looking for whichever reason, I don't know why, but for some reason Lamdim are looking for understanding of things, then you could see that you understand things only or better if I give you an illustration. Or if I tell you, let me explain to you what I mean. I mean to like this, schlepping a lot of boxes is not a malocha. Grada is, but let's assume that it's not. Schlepping a lot of boxes and ish. Schlepping a lot of boxes is not a malocha. That just makes you schwitz, not a istat a schwitz on Shabbos. Aber opening a bottle cap, that is a malocha. Because if you think about it, you're creating a cap for a bottle. Until now, it was just a piece of plastic. And now it became a cap. So you see that the vart is not the work. It's, of course, nobody said that it's hard. Nothing to do with hard. Melucha has nothing to do with hard. It has to do with creating a psachefts, a psazach of the welt. Like Hashem made the world, and it wasn't parchment to make the world. Right? Just was a creation, it was a chiddush. That's why Shabbos, you're not allowed to make chiddushim. Not allowed to work. The problem does not work. Right? So now you understand what I was even trying to say. Right? But what I'm trying to get to is not that you should stop opening bottle caps on Shabbos. That's someone else's job. What this Lamda is trying to get you to understand his concept by way of these examples, because generally human beings have a very hard time speaking directly in abstract language. I could see, I give my shiur, whenever I start off with the abstractions, people turn off. If I start off with the Baba Masa, and then I give you the abstraction, it works much better. Plain, Saich Layusha. It's just for me to give my shiur well, right? The Rambam, in this case, actually does it the wrong way. If you read Shmoneh Perukim, Perek Dalet, he starts with a definition, and then he gives examples, which is the wrong way to do it, according to me. Right?
In the Mishnah, like you were saying, that the Mishnah being correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, like it says
also in the Swidim HaKdash. Also not on Substack.
Yeah, but it was in the Shir here.
It was in the Shir, I don't know,
2 weeks ago. Last week. Yeah, last week?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, like we discussed last week in the sheet here, and also in the sheet in Vera Park 2 weeks ago, I think, that if I start off giving you a definition, like the correct way in each middle is the middle way, not too more, not too less, you look at me like this. Okay. How are you helping me? What do you want from me? Usually people, either they're doing one of these two things, right? Either I'm helping you or I want something from you. But when I say this, I don't know either how you're helping me or what you want from me. If I do what Rambam did in Mishneh Torah, and I say, listen, if you look around at people, you'll notice that some people get angry at every small thing. Some people get angry at nothing. They're like shmatas, you could step on them. It seems to be the correct response is to get angry at big things and not at small things. That's what it says in the first chapter of Mishneh Torah. Then I'll tell you, now you understand why I say that in general, the middle path, which is not too much and not too less, is Derech Hashem, is the correct path. Now you understand what I want from you. Now you also even understand two things. You understand better what I was trying to say when I talked about something called the middle or the mean path. Right? Because now I give you an illustration and you sort of understand. The problem is that that's a bad illustration. You don't actually understand, but that's a different problem. But let's assume that you understand. At least you understand what I'm talking about. Right? That's one reason why we need to have illustrations, and for sure what is going on here is giving illustrations, because otherwise we have no idea what he's saying. In other words, it's not pshat, just to be very clear, it's nish pshat something else, right? Now, first we're talking about Gaba Avuna, and then we're going to talk also Gaba Avod Hashem. Gaba Pe'ila, like I'm doing it. First, Gaba Avuna, it's not the pshat like people think, or in other words, it is the pshat, but not in the sense of learning, only in the sense of reality, right? It's not the pshat that since everything is all the prutim, all the details are always an instance of the klal, always an instance of the general definition. So first I'll tell you, look, the general definition is that you should always go in the middle. And therefore, in midas ha-gvira, you should go in the middle, and in midas ha-histopkis, you should go in the middle. Elbitz ha-nivus, you in the middle. Because then, firstly, that's kind of boring, if that would be the pshat. Because like, you know, you should always go on drive on the right side of the road, also on Heritage Drive, and also on Route 9, and also on Garden State Parkway. That's extremely boring, right? When it's really like that, nobody does that, right? You noticed? The specific case is always just have a straightforward application of the general rule, nobody goes waste their time giving you that. It's a real waste of time, right? Because it's obvious. And if that would be the case, then even though you can say people are stupid, so they don't realize, sometimes they don't understand that this is just a straightforward application. Okay, but then there's teaching you something. It's not just saying you should always drive on the right side, and I can give you a long list of all the roads on which you should drive on the right side. Till you get to England, and then you should drive on the left side. In general, that's not what I'm doing. I'm teaching you something. But what I'm teaching you is really not even that. I'm not just teaching you how the klal, how the rule is chal in this prat. What I'm teaching you is what the rule is. You didn't know what the rule was until I gave you my examples. All I'm doing right now is also backwards, because I should have first gave you an example and showed you how you understand the rule, and then you would understand what I'm saying. But I have to sometimes do it this way. That's why the Ram does it this way, because we have to present it the correct way, supposedly. The correct way, theoretically, although it's not a very helpful way to learn. That's one reason. Right, for example, okay, and I'll give you an example, just so you understand the example. There's two important examples that we talk about. And like Rabbi Aquinas said, these two examples are about two very important areas of human life. One about how to live, and one about how not to die. Most two important things. Right? Two important things. Try to live and try not to die. Right? Maskem? Those are the two most important things. Say, asim harav asayatev. Try not to die and try to live. So how do people not die?
By living well.
Okay, I didn't see this is what happens when you give the definition before the mushal, you don't understand what I want. But the protecting yourself or dealing with danger or death in the correct way is called courage. Very important middah. Like in this sense, the second, the one of the only two middahs that you need. You need a way of dealing with danger, protecting yourself from it, but also facing it, because just running away from it is not actually the solution most of the time, or not all of the time at least, right? So you need to know when to protect yourself, when to face it, when to jump into it, when to protect, when to run away, and so on. That's one thing, dealing with danger, dealing with threats to your life. Second thing is dealing with life, which is, what's the opposite of danger, is pleasure. How do you live? By eating, by drinking, sleeping, things like that. So those are the two areas of life, basically. Right? Love and war. Those are the two areas of life. Right? So, we gotta know how to deal with these two areas. Now, in both of these areas, it's pretty eerie. We have, traditionally, for example, two virtues which deal with these two areas. What are these two virtues called? Remember, they're on the basic list of four.
Courage.
And the other one is? There's two. Being a good person means doing the kind of thing that people do well. And if we told you that mostly people do these two things, or one way of dividing everything into these two, in life as these two things, living. Or having pleasure and protecting yourself from danger, or dealing with danger and dealing with pleasure. So we have what we call the people that have the virtue, the way, the excellence of dealing with these two things. The people that deal with danger correctly, we call them courageous people. Okay? And the people that deal with pleasure correctly, we call them temperate people. As in English. English not Kodesh?
What does temperate mean?
Discipline?
Not discipline. Temperance means exactly this. Now you understand what it means. It means dealing with pleasure correctly.
Temperance?
Yeah. That's what it means. This is a very traditional word. It's just a translation of a translation. It doesn't matter.
Which means?
Dealing with pleasures correctly. Oh, you want to know what the correctly is?
Right.
Not eating too much or too little.
But in courage also looks like that, no? Not too much, too little.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. So temperance, whatever that word is for both.
Nine. Temperance is a word that is talking about dealing with pleasures correctly. Courage is a word that is dealing with temperance doesn't mean the middle, just to be clear. I'm saying that when you say it's weird to call someone who retreats brave, courageous, that's if you frame courage as the act of jumping into the fire. But that's not what we're framing it as. You could call that bravery if you want. You can give this a different word and then say, true, it's not an instance of bravery. But if you frame courage as the correct response to cases of danger, the correct behavior in human life relative to danger, relative to things that are against life, right? Then, of course, the correct response is not always to jump into the front line. Sometimes, right? Sometimes the correct response is to retreat. And therefore, that is what courage consists of. Courage consists of knowing when to retreat and when to advance and so on. Steist? The obvious way of showing this is we can say that the person that always advances and never retreats, even when he should retreat, is not courageous, but Meshiga. Or Aristotle calls him rash. You can find words for this. Rambam has a word for it. Mesira l'sakuna.
What does Aristotle call?
He makes up words for all these things.
No,
it doesn't matter.
You said that.
So now back to the what I was saying is that since these are the most, like, in certain sense, one way of saying it, relative to your own life at least, it's easy to see that the main two midas that we need are courage and temperance. Right? Then we need to see this in the Torah. It's very important to realize language. And what I was saying is that the Heilige Rambam called these two things. Well, I told you the first Gevira, he just called Gevira or Oimetz or something like that. But he called temperance Yiras Chet or Zehiras. And now you understand why there's Yiras Shemaim and Yiras Chet. These are not the same thing. Yiras Chet doesn't mean being afraid of doing an Avaira. This, by the way, I think that he's correct. That is the Pshat. And whenever it says Yiras Chet in Chazal, almost always does not mean being afraid. Chet doesn't mean an Avaira. An Avaira in the sense of breaking the law. Yiras Chet means not being a fresser. Usually it means not being too much of a noyef, which is what chet generally means in the language of Chachomim. You should know Avaira almost always means this. A mitzvah almost always means giving tzedakah. Klal gudol balush Chachomim. And why? Because that's the most important mitzvah and the most important Avaira. In any case, chet almost always means that, like matzilus, chet, and so on. Chet doesn't mean doing an avaira, doing something bad. It means doing a specific kind of avaira, which is chasing pleasure too much. This also shows you how the chumim intuitively think in a virtue ethic kind of way. They don't think in a literature kind of way. Because in other words, like the Ramban says, and this is one of my proofs for this, the Ramban says, and I think he's right also in this, Pshut Pshat, it says in the Chazal that there's b'chira yisrosh le'tomitam chet. What does that mean? Means they never did an avaira. What it means is, says the Ramban, that it means young boys who don't yet have the sexual desire. That's what toim tam chet means. Or it says sometimes in the Gemara that even if you do something bad, it could be toim tam chet. That's why, like it says, b'chet echmas niemis. Not that that's an avaira. People are very confused about this. Not saying that pleasure is an avaira. He's saying that pleasure, chet means pleasure. And of course, the imbalance or the too much chasing pleasure is what leads to all these kinds of avairas that we're talking about. But therefore, the thing to run away is not a virus. It's not the law that you have to be following. It's the self-control or the temperance, the knowing how to act relative to pleasure.
Why call
it yira? Yira just means running away from something. It doesn't mean being afraid. Yira shmai means running away from the shmai. Now that's a different discussion. But yes, it does mean that.
Where do you see that?
I'm telling you meaning of words. Words are not literal. Words, these are idioms. That's what it means. Who told you? Yitzchak Lowy.
No, I'm saying you just brought me a proof for chet.
Yeah.
That's where I'm about.
Yira almost always means aversion or not chasing something. It doesn't mean being afraid. Pachad means being afraid. Things like that. Yira almost always means like a drawing back of. Just what it means.
The same thing. Like when you're afraid,
that's not because I'm telling you if it attach. I'm telling you touch.
No, but why you touch?
But this is like saying I don't have to bring you a proof. If you want, you'll look and you'll read the language. You'll make searches. You'll see that I'm right. I don't have on the second proof for read the way you're reading only. But I want to give you the principle.
Because
people think that means being afraid of something. You don't have to be afraid. Nothing to be afraid of. Not about being afraid of nothing. It's about, like
when
I said,
you're afraid, usually withdraw, run
but
away.
That's why maybe we call it this way. But when we talk about Yiras Chayta, we're not talking about being afraid of doing an avayda or being afraid of having too much pleasure. We're talking about being temperate.
You're doing the action that
not being caught
prompts.
Sometimes that's why it's called that way or something like that. But it's just an idiom. It's like saying there's many idioms. People, we're very messed up because, like I said earlier, that when you read Rambam without his sources, you make up shutim based on language that are not really meaning like that. And all of human language works like this, with like idioms, with things that don't literally mean what they mean, right? You could think of examples, right? Today I saw someone saying that he's a biblical literalist, but that doesn't mean that if it says in the Bible that Jesus is the door, he starts looking for a knob. Yeah, I am a door. Doesn't mean you have to go through me, right? Doesn't mean there's a doorknob. And this is just you have to understand language. Rambam has all pyrek about this in Chelek Pais, right? And so on. If I say, why do we call Chavayis and Shavuos? No. No, give me.
There's a big machlokes about if it's a knob or not. If you need to find a knob or not. It's like in there.
You can make a mushel if you want for that also, but that's just fun. It's not important. In the same way, people, especially when we analyze basic midas, people take things very literally in very funny ways because we don't have the basic context. But if you actually know how to read, you see that it's very obvious that Chazal had this kind of understanding. It's because it's reality, human nature is like this. It's very funny to say that the problem of doing an avayda is that it's an avayda. It's a problem, that's why it's an avayda. Of course, some of them are avaydas and against the law, so and so on. There's differences between those things. But someone who's Ramban is like looking for sources for this when he talks about like a Nuvel B'Shisa Torah and all of that. But it's not really needed. It's very obvious to anyone that reads. That's why he talks about Prishimti and so on. Very obvious to anyone that reads that there's a certain level of self-control of, like I said, of dealing with pleasure as well that is accepted as being how a human should be. And that's what we call Zahiris. That's another word, another thing. When I think the Rambam taught me this, or at least Rabbi Shmuel Mativan, who translates this as Zahiris always, and I think others also. And that's when people, for example, I think that Rabbi Lotzato, who wrote a book on his article, totally misunderstood the whole Braisa. Because he thought that this is Zahiris means being careful. And the sense of like being in some sense, he also says that means being self-controlled, but like always being aware of what you're doing and things like that. But that's totally not what it means. What it means is being, you could call it being careful, but it means it's being temperate. And that's why if we accept his sort of reading, and I think he has Lashonim, his sources for this reading, where he says that the first two midas are Zahiris and Zerizis, and the Mesil Shurim goes on and on about Zahiris, remember? And so that Zahiris means always remembering what you're doing and so on, being careful, because that's the literal translation of Zahiris, and he didn't understand that it's not about being literal here. And then he comes to Zerizis and he just says like, oh, Zerizis is the same thing, just for Mitzvah Saseh. And that's really weird. Maybe the Mesil Shurim also understood what I'm saying, he's just trying to talk to people that don't understand and we got all messed up. But if you understand what I'm saying, then you understand very simply that Zahiris and Zerizis are temperance and courage, which are Mitzvah Saseh and Mitzvah Saseh. It's the same thing. In the sense of, and courage could be understood also more broadly, that I gave you one understanding, which is dealing with danger. If you want, you can understand courage as something like, how do you say it in English? Something like initiative. Right? Taking initiative, which is kind of a kind of courage, or in the family of courage. And that's Zerizas, right? Zerizas means doing things. And Zerizas means not doing things. Or not doing things, but knowing which things to do. But more specifically in the case of pleasure, but... And you could say that all doing things are always going to be bumping into danger, which is why it's sort of connect, like doing something even though there's some risk or some fear and things like that. But that's why I think the Mesil Shurim's structure is correct. It just explains it in a very weird way. But Zahiris and Zerizis, which are according to the points by Yer, the first two midas, can be, I think, very well translated as temperance and courage. And these two things, of course, go together. You need both of them and so on. But... this is all for me to give you an example of how, now you understand a little better from giving this example, you understand a little better what we even mean when we say this rule of the general rule. This general rule of going and being in the middle. And now, in other words, now you could say something that both of these things, now you understand how they're different and how they're the same, right? Knowing how to deal with pleasures and knowing how to deal with dangers, are not the same thing. They're not the same activity that they're dealing. They're referring to different areas of reality, different areas of life. But there is something shared between them, which is yeah, this structure of them being a mean. Because both courage is not something of like looking for the best thing, and both looking for the extreme in something. It's looking for the correct way, in a sense, when to face the danger and how much, and therefore not too much and not too little, which would, are the ways of going wrong relative to that. So we have a simple structure to show someone there's two ways of going wrong relative to courage. One is to escape, run away from every danger, and the other one is to head into every danger. And the same way we could talk about there's two ways of going wrong relative to temperance. One is to head into every pleasure. One is to run away from every pleasure. Or word heading in and running in are not correct, but chasing every pleasure and denying yourself every pleasure. Right? That would be a very simple way of showing how from the rule, from the example, that now you understand at least what I mean when I give you this rule. And you also understand how the rule is true, that the rule is for both. It's the same rule for both. But it's not really helpful when I tell you the rules of both. So this gets us to the second thing of why we need to have examples or illustrations. Not in the sense of illustrations, but in the sense of instructions. This is another sense. First I talk about understandings. Now we understand. I give you a nice sheet. If I give the sheet this way, we understand what we mean when we say the middle. But also in the sense of instruction. And this is important. Because we remember that the ethics is a practical science. Remember? Remember that there's two kinds of sciences. One's about knowing things, one's about doing things. Right? Yeah? And ethics is the kind of science which is about doing things. Right? Another way of saying it is that the sciences that deal with truth and trances that deal with good. The good is, the truth is something you know, and the truth is something you're drawn towards, or you act, aim towards. In other words, you do. And these, with if we, of course these things have connected more than they, I'm dividing them now. But if when we divide it this way, we understand that these two kinds of sciences, these two kinds of learnings, right? Science is just a name for learning, have their own different criteria, right? The criteria, in other words, what makes a theoretical science good is that we can understand it well. That's the kind of thing that I gave you. Understand well how this works. What makes someone, in other words, you say a chacham, right? A chacham is someone smart, someone who knows a certain science. Knowing in a theoretical way means being able to, he's understanding things well. Knowing, if I say he's a chacham and chacham is a meser, I don't mean that he can give a nice shir on himself, right? You understand that too, right? What you mean is that he knows how to act it. Right? This means that the criteria for being successful at this science is acting and not knowing. Of course, you need some knowledge in order to act, so there's some learning going on. But the thing, the aim, and therefore the criteria, is the action and not the knowledge, right? True? Ask him. This means that we have to learn it in an entirely different way. Why? Because some things are bad for knowing but good for doing, and vice versa. Turns out what we're talking about is both is good in some sense for both, but there's still a difference. Right? So, for example, in knowledge, going higher is always better. Of course, we might need to go lower in order to go higher, right? But the more general rule I have, the more I know, the better I know something. Even the better I know that detail, right? If I know that what makes the correct amount of courage good is the being a middle, I know it better than if I just know how to have courage and so on. But in action, you'll notice something very interesting. Even if we know generalities or forms, we don't act them ever. Santazach is that there's something called the Geder condition, and that's not who we get married with. That's not what happens by any chasana, the Geder condition. What happens is that one man marries one wife. So there's a very interesting fact, which is that actions must pertain to particulars, to specific, what we called concrete things before. It's not possible to act on generalities, not possible to act on klulim. It's possible to know them, but it's not possible to act them. Right? Like Aristotle likes things. Doctors don't treat illness. They treat a person with an illness. A person which has a illness. And this time, right? So this one. There's always a this one that you're dealing with in action. This means that if we're speaking about a practical science like ethics, the closer we get to that, the more useful it's going to be. In other words, the more successful we're going to be at the criteria of that science. So the more we can get into our specific case, the closer we can get to particulars, to things that we act on, that's going to be better. Stimmt? If someone is a lamdan, then he's a scientist, a theoretical scientist, then he doesn't, the least the examples he knows is better. Because he's looking for the generalities. If he's a poistic, then he's a practical, although Litvaks don't know that being a poistic is a practical science. I think it's also a theoretical science. And it's just like, and they somehow think that being a poistic is like telling you that on every street you have to go on the right line. But that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. Right? Remember? If you understand that it's a practical science, right, then the more specific you get, the better. Right? And this is another reason why, and that's why the Rambam goes in this order, this is the correct order of theoretically. This is another reason why, if we want to talk about what the good is, we need to talk about specific goods. Stimmt? Now there is a problem here, I'll tell you the problem, I'm going to stop with this and we'll leave you with a problem. There is a problem here, which is that we can't get too specific either. Why can't we get too specific? The Rabbunim have this thing, they have a solution, and this is why they don't have a solution. Halacha is just a form of ethics anyway, so I don't believe in the difference. But there's a problem. Because another way of saying this would be to say, same thing would be to say, I said like how you're good at a science. Another way to say this is how more accurate, right? Accuracy is a way of saying how close I am to the goal of this knowledge, of this Ian, of this science. Right? If in a generality, when my goal is knowing, the more I'm general, I'm more accurate. Right? The general thing is accurate, then when you get into particular things, it becomes more fuzzy, it becomes less accurate because I'm saying something that's only true in one case and not accurately true about the whole. Right? In a practical science, it's the opposite. The more I can talk about specific things, I'll be more accurate. Right? I'm more precise. This leads people to think that therefore, stimmt, accuracy means being close to what I'm trying to get at. Being exactly that. Not more, not less, right? It's also a kind of middle. And this leads also people to think that therefore, if I'm dealing with a practical thing, the best, the most precise way of doing it would be to be 100%, to be entirely about specifics. So therefore, a roof thinks like a good roof, someone whose job is to be a poistic, halacha lemaisa, should be really knowing the halacha for each exact case, right? In my example of the streets, a theoretical person will explain to you what the idea of going on the right lane is or something like that, driving on the right side of the road, and therefore that pertains to everything but in some sense to nothing. And someone who is a little more precise, a little more practical will tell you that in all the roads in New Jersey you have to drive on the right side. And someone who wants to have the most 100% accurate understanding of this will have this very long list of every single road in the city on their head. And that can be the best kind of practical knowledge. He's going to know exactly each road, and this road you have to drive right down on that road. He might maybe like say there's an algorithm, I could shorten it, I can make it easier to remember by saying a cloud. But still the knowledge is basically a long list of each and every single particular. Now, turns out, at least if you learn Rambam or if you learn his sources, you'll see that this is not what happens. We do not ever get to where we need to get. Because in other words, if I say, you're telling me the middle is very abstract, I don't know what that is. Okay, let's talk about courage, some area of life known as dealing with danger, the middle. Okay, very good. But that doesn't help me out either, right? Nobody ever had a question about courage in real life. People had a question, this week, in this battlefield, in that business deal, should I take it or not, right? So that means that the correct answer would be that the book of ethics should be a long list of cases talking about what you should do if on Tuesday there was a battle and there, and then the guy came on that side. Should you run up or run down? And nobody does that. So it turns out we're not doing it well. We're not even trying to do it. You notice that Hilchas Dais doesn't do it. The Rambam and Halacha seems to sometimes do it. Maybe he doesn't, maybe he doesn't, but it seems people think he does sometimes, right? I give you exactly what to do and what not to do. But we don't at all do it on Hilchas Dais. The Chofetz Chaim tried to do it for the end of Hilchas Dais, Perek Zayin, Hilchas Hashanah. But even the Rambam didn't even do that for that. So what's going on? I get Shabbos, I get the Nacht.